With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. Critically analyzing national affairs. This is State of the Nation with Brian McClain and Lynn Shaw on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, phone lines are open if you would like to call in and speak with Lynn or me or our guests at any point. The phone line is up there on the website, tntradio.live is where you find us. Now, Lynn, I gotta pick on the SPLC for a minute because they're always picking on people that don't deserve to be picked on. My goodness. So just days after the SPLC labeled the parental rights organization Moms for Liberty an extremist group on its new hate map, the group's co-founder, Tiffany Justice, took to the stage with Vivek Ramaswamy in a New Hampshire church. And I love that Ramaswamy was already booked to speak with Tiffany Justice and already booked to, connected up with Liberty's Moms for Liberty. And the SPLC, what is the deal with this place? They are so awful. Like, they're a complete joke at this point. And we now have a presidential candidate who's standing there with Tiffany Justice acknowledging this, you know, in front of a bunch of people. I mean, it's actually, the SPLC has been so dreadful. Like, they are the extremist organization, labeling people haters and hate groups. I've been attacked by these people before. My colleagues have been attacked by these people before. They're absolutely dreadful. Can you believe they went after Moms for Liberty?
Absolutely, I can believe that. First of all, Southern Poverty Law Center, Brian, receives so much money. I'm just going to leave that right now. They jump on board. They went after religion, right? They went after religion recently, Catholics in particular. It seems like it's a free-for-all when it comes for Catholics. As far as Moms for Liberty, I'm very familiar with the organization. It began during COVID when parents were home with their kids and noticing what they were being taught, or porn was breaking through on these Chromebooks that were given out by their schools, and the two moms came together. Well, let me point something out, that right now, Moms for Liberty has, I think, over 100 chapters in the United States. They have over 200,000 members at last count. I've worked with them. They are doing nothing but standing up for parents' rights, for children, for this agenda being forced down everybody's throats. And they are doing terrific work because they're educating, they're engaging, they're empowering. Because we have, let me just point out this, California, and we knew this was coming, and California, we can always count on them to start all this nonsense. They have a new bill that's been approved, AB 957. AB 957 says, and I think we've talked about it a little bit before, Brian, that if a child, if you as a parent or caregiver, if you don't support what your child tells you, you know, their gender, if they feel like a girl or boy, if you try to discourage them, if you try to bring them for psychiatric help, if you try to say, we'll talk about it down the road, and that child or somebody else, they say LGBTQIA plus activists in this bill. I don't know who those might be. That could be anybody. That could be, you know, a cleaning woman, a cleaning man, a garbage truck driver. We don't know. If they report you to the school or to the law, you can be accused of child abuse and your child can be taken from you. We've seen this, that it was coming. California has now passed it into law. This is completely frightening. We don't know where this is going, except I can guarantee you where it's going is across all of the United States. This is just the beginning. And so Southern Poverty Law Center, they're behind all of these type of things. This whole, you know, I call this whole war on our children the new COVID. I really do, Brian, because this, mm-hmm. along with the climate, they've got it made. And they seem to be getting away with everything, right? So as far as Moms for Liberty, more power to them. We support them. We need to work for them. We'll get them on the show. These are women concerned about, and we've got dads now, their husbands involved and boyfriends and things, you know, supporting their children. I want to remind everybody, in the United States, there's something called parental autonomy. That is the law. But all of a sudden, nobody's talking about that.
Yeah. SPLC, they are engaging in bumper sticker authoritarianism. That's what I'm going to call it. bumper sticker authoritarianism. They think they can just put a label on somebody, put it on their stupid little hate map, and all the dum-dums out there that beer bong mainstream media into their third eye 24/7 will just believe it. That effect is fading away right now. Look at the ratings of those companies. CNN, they can't, no one's watching that. Only airports and hotels are airing it.
It's
over. The only reason they have any stats at all. All right, Lynn, I think your first guest for this hour is here.
Yeah, well, let's get to Jay Richards is joining us. Dr. Richards is the director of the Helena DeVos Center for Life, Religion, and Family and the William E. Simon Senior Research Fellow in Religious Liberty and Civil Society at the Heritage Foundation, one of our favorite places. Please follow him at Dr. Jay Richards on Twitter, heritage.org. We're going to talk right now, the month of June, the meaning of fidelity. So welcome, Dr. Richards, to State of the Nation.
Great to be with you.
Now, let's get into this, because I love this. You wrote about a return to fidelity, Princeton's professor's brilliant move to flip Pride Month on its head. Tell us about this.
Absolutely. Well, of course, we're all now familiar around the world that June is somehow declared Pride Month. And in the United States, of course, a year ago in June, Roe v. Wade was overturned. And so a lot of people were saying, well, maybe we need to rename June is Life Month. But of course, the March for Life in the U.S. is celebrated in January. People thought, well, that's already happening. What else could we do? And Robbie George at Princeton University, who's a friend and a board member at Heritage, said, why don't we rechristen June as Fidelity Month? It's perfect for a lot of reasons. First of all, because fidelity strikes the right note. I mean, the reality is the Pride Month was always strange. I mean, it would have been one thing if it was about fair treatment for people that identify as gay and lesbian, but it's obviously gone way, way, way past that now. Pride, of course, is also one of the seven deadly sins. It's a really kind of bad thing to rally around. And we thought, well, what's the opposite of that? Well, it'd be fidelity. It would be faithfulness, faithfulness to your country, faithfulness to your children, to your spouse. That's the right sort of positive message that we think we ought to emphasize. And honestly, we kind of hope to give corporations something else that they could brand rather than Pride Month, which seems to be causing them trouble.
Yeah, it's pretty expensive for them this year, isn't it?
Yes, it absolutely is. I mean, it's so strange because, of course, I mean, it was one thing maybe 20 years ago, but now, what is Pride exactly about? Well, it seems to be about sexualizing kids and fast-tracking them to cross-sex hormones and sterilizing surgery. This is, I'm sorry, not something that really makes a lot of sense or should make a lot of sense in the HR rooms and the C-suites of most corporations.
Yeah, marginalizing women, too. It seems to be really into that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's the sort of irony of this is I don't think a lot of people on the left realized when they signed up for the sexual revolution train ride that it was going to end with forcing male rapists into women's prisons and males into women's locker rooms and into their sports. But that's exactly where we are.
Well, Jay, let's be fair. You know, we've opened up an opportunity here. Now they can have $1 million babies in jail. Prisoners in jails have figured out a scam where the trans woman gets, you know, the biological male gets moved from the male prison into the female population, impregnates one of them under a deal, and then the woman sues the prison system and is pretty much gifted $1 million. And then when they get out, they split it. Isn't that a wonderful opportunity that they've set up here? You got to love the equity.
Oh, I mean, this is in some ways I hate to say it, almost hate to make light of it, but it's the perfect parallel of a kind of dysfunctional government that can't think through the natural incentives that they're setting up with policies.
Right.
You know, Dr. J, as I like to call you, I'm here in New York City. So Pride has been for a couple of decades, Pride, you know, there'd be a Pride parade. It has exploded. It has taken over every storefront, every restaurant front, every event. And it is just unbelievable. And what's interesting, and I'm digressing a little bit, is I know lots of gay people my entire life being in New York. Most of them don't like any of this that is going on right now. And granted, they're older gay people. And so 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, even 80s, I know. They don't like all of this happening right now. So I want to ask you, you know, there was a time, I want to switch it up to human rights a little bit. There was a time when a lot of human rights advocates railed against this female circumcision as inhumane. There was a whole thing going on for a long time about this and unconscionable. And so now all of a sudden, why aren't these prepubescent hysterectomies and more? It's a family show, so I'll just leave it at that. You know, and the like, unacceptable. What's going on here? What's the disconnect?
Well, what you're seeing is, unfortunately, we've seen this throughout history, is that a kind of intellectual social contagion, what the Germans call a zeitgeist, a sort of spirit of the age, will just take command of people, and people that are otherwise perfectly natural, that would not like female genital mutilation in some other country, somehow don't use the same reason when it comes to the situation they're in. And so this ideology of gender ideology has just, it's a mind virus, as Elon Musk describes it. It takes over people's rational faculties, so they don't apply the same logic, just as they rightly oppose female genital mutilation, which is actually, if you compare it to the gender surgery, is actually quite minor. It doesn't occur to them, well, surely you should apply that in this case. They don't, because they believe, well, what people really are is this subjective internal gender identity. And so if your gender identity is discordant with your body, the way to fix people that have that problem isn't to help them adjust to their body. It's to transform their bodies to conform to their internal gender identity. This only makes sense if you're already kind of trapped in the thought world of gender ideology.
Yeah, and Jay, what about the utter shutdown, the cancellation, the deplatforming, the shelving, the marginalization of all the people who have done this years ago and come to regret it? Why are they removed from the social media groups that are, you know, full of people that are, you know, being talked into going this direction or moving into this direction? I mean, that says something, I think. What do you make of that?
It does, I mean, this is the growing army of detransitioners. Because remember, according to gender ideology, the way you find out somebody's gender identity is just ask them. And so that, by definition, if I say my gender identity is female, then it's female. That's all there is to it. And so that means someone can't be mistaken about their supposed gender identity. And so they're sort of committed from first principles to deny the very existence of detransitioners, which, looking at it from the outside, these are kids that got sort of sucked into this ideology. They were struggling with something. They identified this kind of ideology as the sort of source of their problems. They got fed into a system, often cross-sex hormones, and sometimes even surgery like double mastectomies for girls, and then realize, this didn't solve my problem. This was a terrible mistake. They're now upset and mad about it. And gender ideologues, for their part, rather than saying, well, maybe we don't have the diagnostic tools set up well to always separate the chaff from the wheat, basically just deny that these kids exist. You know, they say, well, this is internalized homophobia, or it's so rare that it's not worth discussing. I can tell you it's will become less and less rare, because now we're dealing with a massive increase of kids who are presenting with these symptoms. And unfortunately, they're being fast-tracked into this sort of school to sterilization pipeline. And so the longer this goes on, the more detransitioners there will be and the more opposition there will be to this ideology.
And you know, Dr. J, I saw the greatest presentation at the Heritage Foundation pre-COVID, and it was a panel discussion. I'm going to find it. I'm sure it's online on the website, everybodyheritage.org. He was an older gentleman, a school teacher who transitioned, then detransitioned, and gave all of the medical reasons why. The bottom line was, it did not solve, you know, any of his problems. And he went through all of the medical horrors, I know other people, adults now, who say to me, they say, Lynn, I wouldn't wish this on anybody. For not, you know, a child, forget about that, but even an adult. The medical complications are so horrific that people don't realize. And I saw this morning you were tweeting about an article that appeared, four controversial doctors helping Republicans attack the trans healthcare. And you called this a shameless hit piece. What was this about?
Well, again, the truth of the matter is, if you're a doctor that wants to speak out against this stuff, the gender ideologues are so intense that they will vilify and destroy you. I mean, it's just that simple. And so I can tell you, we talk all the time to doctors and medical scientists who say, okay, this is an atrocity. I can't imagine what's happened in my profession. They're afraid to speak out about it. And so the few that are willing to speak out about it end up getting isolated. So this piece in The Guardian was basically, okay, here's the four medical doctors that have been willing to testify publicly. So now we're going to try to destroy them, which is exactly what this piece in The Guardian was. It was a hit piece against the few brave souls so far that are willing to speak publicly about this. I mean, that's the kind of ugliness of the situation we're in. All the social rewards are on the other side. But if you're a pediatrician who speaks out against this, you can risk your life and your livelihood simply for saying what you believe to be true, even if you got the evidence on your side.
Yeah, well, it certainly is heating up. We've only got about a minute or two left here, Dr. Richards, but I'm curious, you know, right now I'm out here in Texas. We're banning a lot of this stuff right now. Our AG and our governor are passing bills to stop the you know, gender affirming surgeries and drugs for minors. And President Biden is looking at setting up a new anti-book burning czar of some sort and compelling the nation to allow schools to have pornographic materials, basically, in their libraries and all this stuff. What do you think about the state versus federal battle that we're about to be party to in a short form, if you can?
Well, that's exactly where we're going to be. In fact, Texas is one of 20 states that have now passed these laws. Biden, for his part, is pushing the federal government in the opposite direction. Unfortunately, this is going straight to the courts, but I'm very optimistic. As long as the subject is crazy ideology versus basic biological science, I would vote for victory on the side of science over ideology in this case.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Jay Richards. Find him over at heritage.org. We're going to we'll be in touch, Dr. Richards. We'll do this again real soon. We got to stay in touch because this stuff's going to go on. Thank you very much.
Yes,
absolutely. Thanks. Great to be with you all.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. All right. At TNT Radio, we never go home, and we are committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally. No matter what, we got you covered on TNT Radio.
You should hear what Dirk Bowman is talking about.
You can see immediately what you're describing because the doctors in our world have laboratory white coats, and that shows the distance that they have to the object of their science. That is not being as close as possible, not what you describe being in a communicative possibility, but rather with a white coat to show that there's an object and you're treated scientifically without feeling, really. And it's also that in a way that we pay doctors, we go to doctors and pay them when we're sick, whereas it would be more interesting to have it the Chinese style where you pay as long as you're healthy and the purpose is to keep you healthy. So, and that also in a third part reminds me of the way of communication, which was in the COVID situation became like warfare and became very totalitarian from the state side. This is what brought me, in the beginning for me it was a scientific topic, but I disliked very soon how everything constitutional was not constitutional, which means don't touch it, but became something like a fair weather story. If it starts to rain, it's not valid anymore.
The Dirk Bowman Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio. A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Let's talk about the state of the nation. Call Brian McLean and Lynn Shaw now from the U.S. and Canada. Call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Our next guest is a returning guest. He first joined us back early April, I believe. He's a Air Force ICBM veteran, a competitive shooter, avid outdoorsman. He's been a gun rights activist for over a decade and has seen the effectiveness of organizations like Gun Owners of America that they have made. And right now, we're going to talk about that today. We've got Wes Verdell joining us once again on State of the Nation. He's the Texas State Director for Gun Owners of America. Wes, welcome back to State of the Nation. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Hey, it's great to have you back on. I'm joined with Lynn Shaw. She's not on our viewer here, but she's with us. She's with us on the microphone, and we want to get an update on this whole ATF pistol brace ruling. It's my understanding, last I looked, there was several cases, Mock v. Garland, Second Amendment Foundation versus ATF, and then State of Texas combined with you guys, right? Gun Owners of America, Texas versus yep. ATF. So what's the update here on the pistol brace definition rulings?
Yeah, we're trying to hit them from every angle we can. You know, on ours, as far as we co-filed with the Attorney General's office, and we got that preliminary injunction granted the other day, which is fantastic. A lot of questions that we're getting is, who does it apply to? One of them that it applies to is the employees of the state of Texas, and that kind of throws people off. Hey, why are those guys in this deal? But it's actually because we filed with the Attorney General's office. They're representing the employees of Texas. So that's why, if you're an employee of Texas, you fall under this category. And then also it grants an injunction for all GOA members that were members from 31 or prior to June 1st. We're still trying to get clarification as to if you get your membership now, you know, after June 1st or later, do you fall under that category of being protected on that preliminary injunction? We don't have answer for that yet. I would say that it sure can't hurt to go ahead and get the membership. And I'm a little biased, you know, so of course I'm going to encourage people to get the membership anyways. But, you know, we think that as of right now, we don't see them trying to go in there and find out, hey, what date did you have this person's membership on? And it's unlikely that the ATF is going to show up at your door anyways and want to know this information. But we want to make sure that as many people are protected as possible. And it's a little strange that, you know, it's only GOA members and Texas employees. Like, you would want it to be applied to everyone in the country. And that's what we're trying for. That's the end goal. We're hoping in the long run that that we end up getting ruled in the Supreme Court that the ATF's restriction on the length of the barrels is unconstitutional. And we think that's a real possibility. We're in a time right now where the courts have been very respectful to the Second Amendment. We'll say it that way. And anyway, so we're very fortunate to have some of the rulings that we've had in the last couple of years. And then in Texas, we've had some great rulings too. You know, we had where Judge Mark Pittman had ruled that you can't restrict the rights of 18, 19, and 20-year-olds from constitutional carry and license carry, which is a fantastic win. And that goes to another gun group that had won that lawsuit, and we're grateful for what they did. And then I can't remember which state. I want to say Virginia, but I'm not sure. But there was another one that just ruled it's unconstitutional to tell 18, 19, and 20-year-olds that they can't purchase pistols, which takes us into, we fought a bill here in Texas. They were trying to raise the age to 21 to basically make it to where if you own a semi-automatic firearm that uses a detachable magazine, that you're not going to be able to purchase that firearm until 21. We fought that bill. There were two Republicans that supported that bill. We hammered on them pretty hard, and hopefully they learned a lesson they won't forget. And I went into their offices. I'm probably not allowed back in those offices, but I told them, I was like, hey, you violated your oath to the Constitution. You violated your principles, the Republican Party, and we're going to hammer you in your districts for doing this.
Hey, man, that's why people support Gun Owners of America. You know, right now it's like Second Amendment Foundation, GOA, FPC. You guys are doing the heavy lifting right here. And I think that's why you get the big support, you know. And
all great. So,
yeah.
Or sorry about that. All great organizations too. Second Amendment Foundation, those guys led the way on the Bruin case, you know. And GOA participated in providing an amicus brief in that. GOA provided an amicus brief, and FPC's lawsuit on the pistol brace too, which is going well. So the FPC members are protected. The GOA members are protected. So that's it's been huge wins for all of us so far.
You know, Wes, I want to bring it back because we're talking about the courts. I want to go back, the Supreme Court. There was a case, District of Columbia v. Heller, 2008. And the Supreme Court made it very clear and said the right to possess and carry weapons is established. So taking this into account, how does the current administration, and even on the state levels, how is everybody missing this?
Yeah, honestly, I think it's there's a lot of people that don't care what the Constitution says that are elected or currently working for government. And it's sad that every one of them, you know, swore an oath to the Constitution, but they don't actually care what the Constitution says. They just want to push their agenda on it. And so we see basically blatant disregard for the Constitution, which is sad to watch that there's people in the government right now that are advocating to violate your rights, and they know that they don't have the authority to do so. You know, we sat in a committee hearing where a Democrat here in Texas, we were pointing out, hey, these are unconstitutional, you know, these laws like the 21 and up bill. And anyways, the Democrat actually said it's his duty to try to push the boundaries and to see how far he can take it, which is insanity. But that's the mentality a bunch of them have. So what they're trying to do is how far can we push the boundary? And they say, let's make a law and then let the court sort it out so they can make all the anti-gun laws they want, get it passed into liberal states. Joe Biden, who doesn't even know he's Joe Biden, you know, has enabled the ATF to come after us like a mafia. And it's pretty sad. Thank God for Ring doorbells and cell phones and everything else where people are recording their interactions with it. So you get to see it. And there was a great video not too long ago where the ATF had come to a guy's house asking about one of the force reset triggers or the wide open triggers. And he filmed it, and he did a great job, very articulate. And he told the ATF agent, who looks like a very pro-gun guy, like a very constitutional guy, he's like, hey, look, like, you got to pick a side here. You know, you're trying to feed your family. We get that. But you need to pick a side, whether you're going to stand on the side of the Constitution or with the ATF right now, which was pretty amazing to watch that guy calmly assert that to that guy. So,
yeah.
Yeah,
I saw that.
I think there's a bunch of agents. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
There are a bunch of agents that have seen that at this point. You know, we interviewed former special FBI agent Steve Friend yesterday and heard his story. And that's where his career ended. His career ended with his oath. It was like, mm-hmm. No, you know, you guys need to explain to me how this is constitutional, what you're asking me to do here. I'm paraphrasing, of course. His story is amazing. He wrote a new book about it. I recommend people check it out. But it's like the buck stops here for some people when it comes to the Constitution. And, you know, again, I'm going to recommend to you out there listening to this right now that if these are important things for you, you know, keeping our country, keeping the foundation of our country being what it was, and you're not the type of person that can do what Wes does, which is walk into your representative's office and say, hey, you violated the Constitution and we're not going to stand for it, then you probably should support GOA or FPC or all of them, you know, preferentially, because they're all doing great work. Now, Wes, if you can hold the line for a second here, we're going to take a headline with today's news talk, and we'll be right back. We got a couple more questions for you on State of the Nation. This is TNT Radio.
Here's the news.
TNT Radio News.
News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Donald Trump is the first former president to be indicted on federal charges. President Biden is also under investigation for having classified documents in his personal records. He also laughs off his malarkey, an allegation House Republicans are investigating whether he may have been involved in bribes in Ukraine while vice president. The UK will need to build at least 15 cities the size of Birmingham to cope with rising immigration figures, according to a new think tank report.
Silence for thinking differently?
Silence for thinking differently.
Not here. Silence for asking questions?
Not here.
Not here. Silence for discussing the other side of the story? Not on TNT Radio. Join the conversation anytime. Search TNT Radio on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Getter, or Gab. Download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk, TNT Radio.
We're with Wes Verdell from Gun Owners of America. Wes, do me a favor, and maybe because we have a wide, worldwide audience, it's not just, American Second Amendment enthusiasts out there listening to this show. The show goes out wide, wide, wide. So maybe put into context for people that don't know what a pistol brace is, just quickly what it is, and then like what it would actually mean to how many Americans, if this ATF redefinition were to become, you know, part of our law, which doesn't make any sense. I thought Congress was supposed to make law, not regulatory agencies, but anyways.
Yep. Yeah. So, the pistol brace, you know, basically it started off as you had a lot of wounded vets coming back from Operation Enduring Freedom and OIF and all that. Anyways, they're coming back, they're wounded. A guy designed a brace which goes on the buffer tube of the AR, and that's meant to where somebody can shoot an AR pistol, generally a pistol, because you're going to want a shorter barrel to keep the weight down while you're doing this, to shoot it as a pistol while it's strapped to your arm. The ATF, initially there were some questions on like, hey, can I shoulder this thing? And the ATF came out with a letter that said, yes, you can shoulder this. And so a lot of people were buying the pistol braces and shouldering them, and then there's this clear letter that stated it's legal to own the pistol brace. It's not an SBR. You can shoulder it. Then with Biden and his rogue administration, they've come out and said, nope, we're going to label this as an SBR, short-barreled rifle, which in America, based on the National Firearms Act of 1934, means any barrel shorter than 16 inches on the centerfire rifle or centerfire cartridge. And let's see here, shotguns would be 18 inch. That's how they got Randy Weaver. They were trying to go after him during the Ruby Ridge incident,
right?
Or standoff, not incident. But anyways, 40 million people, it's estimated 40 million rifles are in existence with these pistol braces on right now. So we're doing everything we can. At GOA, we don't believe that regulating the length of the barrel even makes sense. We believe it's a violation of the Constitution. And you look at countries like New Zealand, unless they've changed the law since the last time I looked, they don't regulate the length of a barrel. I actually sold a 454 Casull Thompson Center Encore to a guy in New Zealand, and he was going to have that 8-inch 454 Casull barrel on a rifle, basically in a rifle setup with a shoulder stock, and it was completely legal there. There was no issue, and you can have suppressors in New Zealand without regulation. So suppressors are pretty inexpensive over there also.
Yeah, and I remember there was it looks like this campaign's no longer active, but there was 2705, HB 2705, to remove short barrel weapons from the penal code. What happened there? Is that still in process? So, or
no, we'll have to refile it again next session. That was our bill, our language. The short story of it is I'm in the Capitol. I see my friend Tom Glass. He's sitting at a bench kind of by one of the exits. And I sit down with him. We're talking. He says, hey, you remember the suppressor freedom bill that was passed last session? I said, yeah. And he's like, why can't we do that with short-barreled weapons? And it's like a light bulb went off. It's like, that's an amazing idea. Because in our penal code in Texas, it says prohibited weapon, short-barreled weapons. And anyway, so we called our legal counsel. Richard Hayes Jr. wrote the bill up for us in 5 minutes. And then we worked on ended up getting it filed. Made it out of committee, and then it got hung up in calendars, I believe was where it was. Basically, I think calendars had passed it out, but they ran out of time for it to be heard. Now, there's 9,000 bills that are filed. They're trying to get through a ton of bills. So you could say, well, it got lost in the sea of bills. There was enough political pressure on the legislators that I think this should have been a priority bill that should have gotten passed out. So it'll be filed again. Hopefully by then we have a Supreme Court ruling that states that hey, it's unconstitutional already to do this. We were trying to get the Texas Penal Code in line with the victory at the Supreme Court level. And Texas should be leading the way. You know, a lot of people probably believe this, but Texas can be pretty arrogant or confident in our status in the world. We're the best country in the world in Texas. But, you know, Texas should be leading the way, and sometimes Texas is usually lagging behind some other great states. Oklahoma beats us all the time. So I would ask our legislators, hey, step it up and show Oklahoma who's the better state here. So
yeah.
And you know, you touched on something earlier about or go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
No,
okay,
go ahead.
So y'all touched on something earlier about like me getting to go to the Capitol and whatnot. I've been doing this 10 years, and I want to just let everybody know, like, hey, every one of y'all can come to the Capitol, talk to your legislators, hold them accountable. Don't just send them an email, which emails are great. Call them, go to their offices. You know, I was working as a diesel mechanic. I'm not like some mastermind wealthy guy or something like that, just has this free time to go to the Capitol. I'm a working class guy that for the last 10 years has been pretty PO'd at where Texas gun laws have been. and just through that process over 10 years, you know, you go once, you don't know what you're doing. That's okay. Go twice, you know, a little more. And before you know it, you're very effective and you know who the legislators are and you can go in and have conversation. This is something anybody can do as long as you, go in somewhat respectful, but let them know you're serious. And I think that anybody listening has the ability to make change and affect their government. It's not, you don't just have to be someone that's born into wealth with a lot of free time or something like that. Like the only time you'll have is the time you make to go do it. If you don't make it, you won't have it.
I'm glad you brought that up, Wes, because I think most people don't realize they can just go to the Capitol, you know, do your homework. Like you said, you know, be respectful and visit these offices and make an impact. That is the single most important thing everybody can do. I think people don't realize, I talk to a lot of people, that you can actually just go and do that. I would recommend going on a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, because a lot of them aren't in their offices on Mondays and Fridays. So I'll just throw that in. But yeah. I want to finish up. I want to ask you, it's true. They aren't, definitely not a Friday. I want to ask you, though, with all the crazy going on, with all the insanity, I sit here in New York City where they talk about guns nonstop. It never ends. Yet we have people being attacked all the time and murdered with knives and axes and all kinds of things, machetes.
Yep.
Do you ever see, with all this craziness going on, the Second Amendment repealed by all of these crazy, insane people? Could you see it going that way?
I think that we are, as a country, losing an understanding of why the Second Amendment exists and why hard work exists. And I talk about doing manual labor, like my hands are covered in scars and I'm proud of it. It's built the character that I am. But I think we're losing a part of that where a lot of people don't get those experiences anymore. And when there's enough people that don't understand why the Second Amendment exists, then we are definitely going to lose that battle. You know, it's, hopefully it never comes to actual civil war or anything like that. And I'm not advocating for that, but we have to do our job to educate the public of what's going on. And, you know, ultimately we get the government we deserve. And if people fail to participate and hold their government accountable, we're going to get the government we deserve because we sat on our hands. So, and you know, I'm doing this for my kids and my future grandkids and all that. Someday I'm going to have to look at them. Someday I might be laying on my deathbed and I'm either going to know that I did something and try to make a difference, or I'm going to have regret and know that I sat by while government ran over us. So government, regardless of how it starts out, always ends up growing tyrannical, no matter how good the base was from the beginning, which our founding fathers gave us a great base. Government's going to grow more tyrannical. And the more we allow them to do it, they will do it.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, I was going to ask you for some parting words, but I think those are the best parting words we could possibly leave everybody with. Texas.gunowners.org. Get on over there and support these guys. You can become a member for a year for just $25 over there, and it might be the best $25 you've ever spent because it could stop you potentially from being turned into a felon overnight. Wes, thank you so much. We're going to have you back on again real soon.
Awesome. Thanks a lot. It's good talking to you.
All right. Thanks. Yeah, you too. There he goes, everybody. That's Wes Verdell, and this is State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
When the left talks about shootings, the conversation inevitably turns to guns and the need for new gun laws. What's left out of the conversation is locking up the shooters. If street thugs knew that they'd be rotting in prison if they got caught, they wouldn't be so quick to pull the trigger. But in most major cities around the country, they have little to worry about. Even when they do go to jail, the sentence usually does not fit the crime. Take the story of an 18-year-old in California. 18! Yet the leftist DA tried him as a juvenile for the road rage murder of a newlywed. He's also been linked to two other murders, and he only got 7 years behind bars. He'll be eligible for parole way before that. Now, those who go into a school or a mall, they plan on dying. But for street thugs who use handguns as water pistols, mandatory sentences like a minimum of 10 years behind bars would not only be a deterrent, but it would keep them off the streets, rotting in prison where they belong. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
The 9/11 terrorist attacks shocked the world and led to the so-called War on Terror. But there's another side to 9/11, which the mainstream media won't cover. For several years, more than 3,000 qualified professionals, at Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth have demanded a proper investigation into 9/11. A genuine investigation into 9/11 would consider evidence that the World Trade Center towers were rigged for controlled demolitions. This includes the third building that collapsed on that fateful day, Building 7, the 47-story skyscraper, which dropped in under 7 seconds, yet no plane crashed into it. This is particularly troubling, as Building 7 was probably one of the most secure buildings in the USA, with the US Secret Service, Department of Defense, and CIA among its tenants. Who would have access to rig a controlled demolition? TNT Radio will cover this story to find the actual perpetrators of the 9/11 attacks.
You're with Brian McLean, Lynn Shaw, and State of the Nation on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, our next guest is a Los Angeles-based actor and energy healer from Northern California originally, and he has a strong interest in the nature of reality, supernatural, unexplained phenomena, conspiracy awareness, all kinds of really fun endeavors going on with our good friend. He was a caller earlier this week on the open line. We've got Matthew Mann with us. Matt Mann, what's up, dude? Welcome to State of the Nation.
Hey, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's great to have you, man. I'm here with Lynn Shaw, as you know, and we wanted to kind of pick up where we left off when you called earlier this week. We kind of got started on the topic of let's set the partisan stuff aside for a minute. Let's set the power politics aside and talk about the actual maybe tools of the global elite, or the esoterics, or the, you know, the history of the global elite, or how they like to weaponize the human spirit and mind against us. What do you think, man? Take us somewhere.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it just, it's really important to start having these conversations, to go after like the root of the problems of the world. And that is this, global elite. You know, a lot of them are in these various secret societies and whatnot. And for like beginners, you know, want to, you know, dip their toes in the rabbit hole. A good place to start that I would recommend is there's a great documentary called Monopoly Men, Secrets of the Federal Reserve. It's about 40 minutes long. It was originally produced for television as part of a series called Phenomenon, the Lost Archives, and it was hosted by Dean Stockwell of Quantum Leap fame. For those of you old enough to remember Quantum Leap from the 80s, TV show with Scott Bakula. But it's legit, and it goes into the creation of the Federal Reserve, which everybody should know about, because it's pretty crazy. It was created by these seven men on Jekyll Island, and it was like a representative of the Morgan family, or maybe J.P. Morgan himself was there, but like I think it was just a representative of the Rockefeller family, and then the Warburgs and the Ships, and these six different families. And then the seventh one was a senator that they kind of, you know, paid off to pass this thing. And it was passed on Christmas Eve when everybody was home for, you know, the holidays. And we've been under this thing ever since. The Federal Reserve is a privately owned bank. It's not part of the federal government. The federal government has no oversight over it. They can raise and lower interest rates as they see fit, print up money out of thin air as they see fit. And when I called in earlier, I talked about how, I think that, Putin is just another puppet of these global elites, and that, I'm skeptical about it. It could also be that, you know, all our other perceived enemies, you know, like China, Iran, North Korea, that all of these guys are also working for the same, you know, evil dudes that, you know, Biden is working for. And it's all, we're all just living in this big theater, kind of at their mercy. And so, I don't know. That's kind of a good place to start, I think.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think,
Matt,
Lynn?
I want to take it back a little bit, because
ahead,
it's
Lynn.
So much to like. It's so much like Matt to like absorb, think about, and then of course I'm always like, and so what do we do? You know, like that's always where I go. But I want to go back and I want to ask you, when do you think a belief becomes dangerous, if ever?
I actually don't like to use the word belief, you know, because, you know, I know what I know and I don't know what I don't know. And when I talk about my personal knowing, it's on a deep rooted, like, spiritual level. Like, I actually had my spiritual awakening before I had my kind of conspiratorial awakening going back to 2005. And I mean, even going back, you know, further than that, like, I remember in like grade school, like, teachers openly talking about how, oh yeah, you know, it's, you know, quite likely that, you know, our government knew about Pearl Harbor and let it happen as an excuse to, you know, get into war. And I think most Americans are aware of that. And if you do a little research on it, not only did we let it happen, but there's this declassified document called the McCollum Memo that outlined five steps that our government should take to provoke Japan into an attack, you know, mostly like economic things. And we took every one of those steps, and then Japan attacked. And not only did we let it happen, but we moved more ships into Pearl Harbor than would normally be there to make it worse. And so it's just, you know, and so, like, if you look at the current, like, war in Ukraine, you know, a lot of people might go, okay, so if this war was planned out and intentionally, you know, manufactured, like every other war has been, what's the point? What are they trying to get out of this war? And, like, what I want everyone to understand is what they get out of it is war itself, because the guys who start the wars are the ones who own the weapons companies that manufacture the weapons, and they also own the banks that loan the money to the governments to buy the weapons. So as long as there's a war going on, they're making money on both ends.
Yeah, and you can see they're laundering old weapons of war into that theater right now, and then cutting brand new checks to all of our military industrial complex to create the next generation of weaponry. And you can see examples of that. They just contracted Sig Sauer to make a new squad assault rifle and squad machine guns on a new ballistics platform, which is completely unnecessary, just an egregious, unnecessary thing if you talk to most people out there in the know. And that's just one example, you know, but we're getting rid of all the old tech, and now they're getting contracts to try to make, you know, hypersonic missiles and to try to, you know, at least by the optics they're giving us, try to catch up with, you know, the other two global superpowers and their technology. But yeah, we can see examples of this, man.
Yeah.
So Matt, I want to ask you, with all of this, and with your knowledge, with your research, with how you've developed into, you know, how do we talk now? Do you ever talk to young people about any of this? Like, how do we deal with them? Because I always say it's like for the young people 30 and under being hit over the head. Well, for all of us, but for kids especially, there's so many different things in the headlines about children, youth mental health crisis, what they're going through, addictions of the internet. Do you ever talk to young people and try to enlighten them about any of these subjects? Where do you go with our young people with all of this? Because they're our next, you know, generation coming up. We have to educate, make them aware. How do you deal with that?
That's a great question and a great point. And we really do need to reach the youth. And I don't have a great answer. I mean, I guess the obvious answer is like social media. But, you know, I was trying to bang the drum for years on social media, trying to wake people up to this stuff. And it just felt like no one wanted to hear it. And I just felt like, well, geez, this stuff has been like so blatantly out in the open for so many years now. And if people haven't seen the truth by now, I don't even know if I have any hope for them. I mean, this latest, you know, COVID, you know, plandemic, you know, as an example, you know, Bill Gates, that clip of Bill Gates went viral of him doing a TED talk saying he wants to, you know, lower the Earth's population by whatever percent it was. I don't want to misquote it, but, you know, everybody saw this and they still lined up for this experimental, you know, vaccine, quote unquote, vaccine that he's behind. And I'm just like, well, did you guys not see that clip? I don't even know what and that's what I meant when I, like, you know, called in earlier and, like, you know, I've just kind of given up hope, but you guys are, you know, have inspired me to, like, okay, well, here's where we can start. We can start having this conversation amongst ourselves. And, you know, I encourage, you know, other, you know, I challenge other hosts on this network, and 'cause I listen to some other shows on the network too. And, I hear a lot of the same talk of like, you know, oh, the left this and, you know, the Democrats that. And we really need to have this conversation of like, these people who control everything, they're controlling both sides and they profit and they have an interest in keeping us fighting against each other. So we're not, because like, okay, right. An obvious question is going to come up like, okay, if they're that rich and that powerful, do we have any hope of stopping them? Absolutely. And this is how we stop them, just by expanding the awareness of them. Because at a certain point, there's a tipping point of, you know, the mass consciousness, that when the majority of people, you know, become aware of this, or maybe it's, I think it would take more than 51%, maybe up, you know, closer to 70% or something. If 70% of the Earth's population, or let's just focus on this country, if this country's population became aware of this, somehow energetically, just the vibration of that would like kind of, I think, force these guys out of power somehow. I think that's how we get them out of power, is just by expanding the awareness of it.
Yeah, and I think that's probably one of the reasons why the culture war and the identity politics of the culture war are focused on so much, Matt. I mean, I completely get it, because it's like, you know, I kind of got my feet wet in all this after, much like you said, start with the Federal Reserve Act or the Act of 1870. Those are great places to start. Once, you know, it's hard to not just fall down all the rabbit holes once you've gone into those. You could also recommend Creature from Jekyll Island, the book, to go along with the Monopoly Men documentary. Yeah. Because I think that, you know, like you're saying, these people, like you'll discover in this research. I also recommend Jay Dyer's and Odd Man Out's podcasts and YouTube channels, because they really go into the esoterics and the history and the philosophies and the preeminent globalist thinkers over the world, you know, over history. And, you know, then you can expand out to the people that they influenced from there. It becomes very, very interesting. But like with regards to the tools of these global elites, Matt, I mean, I think the culture war right now is one of their heaviest hammers they're wielding, because they are, you know, and unfortunately that has become politicized because of identity politics. So, I mean, how do we square that? Like, knowing that we don't want to go maybe full conservative, but that there's literally a technocratic Maoist revolution brewing, you know, at the behest of all these forces, unknowingly to a lot of them, unfortunately, under the guise of the progressive wing.
Yeah, and I really want to shout you guys out for exposing that, especially this agenda of like trying to convert our youth into like trans people. And now, it's no secret, once you get down this rabbit hole, that, you know, these global elites have had this population control agenda for years. They believe the Earth is overpopulated, and they have these various methods to shorten our lives, kill people, etc. And so this is, you know, a great population control tool of, you know, if people, you know, do this gender switching, then they're no longer able to have children, of course. And you guys have exposed how in the schools, these programs have surfaced of or been exposed of, you know, trying to normalize this kind of thinking. And of course, you know, if you want to get gender surgery and you've done all the research, the pros and the cons, and you want to do it, that's great. But I do agree that, you know, having these schools force this on children without parents' consent or even knowledge is a clear case of them. That's a population control tool right there, plain and simple.
You know, Matt, right. I want to say to you and Brian, here's how we have to think about all of this, because it's too big. It's too overwhelming. If you talk to one person a day, you educate like one person a day, like that's the way we have to be thinking, almost in this grassroots kind of vision, because we're fighting evil, right? So that is the way I want everybody to think about all of this. And then we've done our job. It's like one at a time. And that one then can snowball out and get others. I don't see any other way to do it, because what's going on is too big to take on all of that. But we've got to get the communities involved and educated. And it's not going to be done on social. I like to call it anti-social media myself because of censorship and things like that. It's actually talking to people. So I suggest, Matt, you make little pods. You start in your community. If you get two little people together, you know, two kids, you get two parents, you start in the pod formation, and you spread it from there. That's what I,
Matt, you got,
I want to tell you,
do. Yeah, I love it, Lynn. Matt, you got 1 minute. Give us something inspirational on the way out. You get the parting words for this week's State of the Nation.
That's a great idea. Let's all do that. I just also wanted to touch on, I want to shout out Patrick Henningsen. I catch his show sometimes. And he pointed out to us that this Zelensky guy used to be an actor and a stand-up comedian. And again, I want to encourage people to connect the dots because, you know, if we're familiar with the crisis actor phenomenon and how they've used actors in the past. So, of course, he's an actor and a puppet, as is probably Putin and these other guys. And this thing has probably been planned out for years to just, you know, line the pockets of the war profiteers, unfortunately. And it's just tragic.
All right.
All the people that have died. And
terrible. You know, we got to go. We got to go, Matt.
That's it, everybody.